ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम द सेवेंथ कैंटो सिक्स्थ चैप्टर चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड प्रहलाद इंस्ट्रक्ट्स हिज डेमोनियक स्कूलमेट्स टेक्स्ट नंबर 3। सो काम इंद्रिया काम दैत्या देह योगेन देहिना सर्वत्र लभ्यते दैवान् यता दुःखम् अयत्नतः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पस बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Translation. Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress." In the material world, in any form of life, there is some so-called happiness and so-called distress. No one invites distress in order to suffer, and still it comes. Similarly, even if we do not endeavor to obtain the advantages of material happiness, we shall obtain them automatically. This happiness and distress are obtainable in any form of life without endeavor. Thus, there is no need to waste time and energy fighting against distress or working very hard for happiness. Our only business in the human form of life should be to revive our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become qualified to return home back to Godhead. Material happiness and distress come as soon as we accept a material body, regardless of what form. We cannot avoid such happiness and distress under any circumstances. The best use of human life, therefore, lies in reviving our relationship with the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. Sukam endriyakam deitya deha yogena dehinam sarvatra labhyate devad yata dukkam ayatnataha. Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress." So we are continuing to go through these instructions of Prahlad Maharaj to his demoniac schoolmates. And of course, through the process of instructing his schoolmates is actually instructing us. Very powerful verses that we have been reading in the last few days, beginning with the first verse of this chapter, where Prahlad Maharaj instructs his friends that this is the right time when you are actually young to take up to the process of God consciousness. So in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada writes very similar to the purport that he has written in the shloka in the Bhagavad Gita, Matras Parshastu Kaunteya Sitoshna Sukha Dukkada Agamam Paino Nityas Tam Titiksha Swabharata. So this, in this material world, happiness and distress comes upon us just like the summer and the winter season. So just like the seasons change without our intervention or without us having any control over it, similarly, happiness and distress also comes into our lives. So Srila Prabhupada is saying that why should we endeavor for happiness when it is in any case going to come to us automatically? Unfortunately, practically the whole material creation, or this, or you can say the 99% of the human beings, they don't have the understanding of this particular aspect of the philosophy. And everybody tries his level best to somehow or the other make every arrangement to ensure that he has happiness. And particularly we see in the Western countries, to what extent they try to create situations which are comfortable and try to avoid situations which are uncomfortable. Everything is arranged so nicely. Everything is made so beautiful. All facilities are given whereby a person's quality of life is tremendously enhanced. So it is little wonder that Indians aspire to go to such places, or for that matter anybody aspires to go to such places, because the quality of life is so nice. Like we were traveling across Asia a couple of weeks back, and we were in the association of Vaisheshika Prabhu, one of Srila Prabhupada's early disciples. And no doubt the places that we were traveling was also much more beautiful than what situation we have here in India. But Vaisheshika Prabhu summed up the whole thing in just a few words. He said, ultimately, these people have not been able to find a solution to birth, old age, disease, and death. What is the use of having all these facilities? So here is a person who has actually lived Srila Prabhupada's teaching for the last 35 years. And one of the best book distributors that we have in ISKCON, practically his whole life is just spent in training people how to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. In fact, we were able to see him in action. Even in a country like Taiwan, where he didn't know the language at all, he would just catch hold of anybody in the street, and just by his enthusiasm and just by his demeanor, people would get so much attracted to him. He would just go out and reach out to them, shake their hands, and introduce himself. He would call himself Vaish, because it's very difficult to pronounce such a long word, Vaisheshika. And then he would ask him for his name. And obviously, when you ask a person for his name, he's going to tell you his name. And then he would start talking to him as if he has been his friend for so many years. Put his hand around his shoulder and then start talking to him about the book. It was so interesting to see him in action in so many different places. He would do practically the same thing. And he had a set of statements that he would make to a person whom he would approach. And each of the statements were so disarming that automatically it would put that person at ease. So he was saying that in none of these countries we have ever found a solution to birth, old age, disease, and death. And in fact, in Hong Kong, the office of the BBT was located very close to a lane which was occupied by funeral parlors. Yeah. It's maybe the area that they selected was relatively inexpensive, but the BBT office was located over there, and a whole street of funeral parlors. So when we used to go to the office, naturally we would have to pass through that area, and we could see for ourselves how it is that Maya is so strong that in spite of having death all around you, every shop in that particular lane, it's like when you go to Buleshwar, you have the shops which sell this deity paraphernalia. You have rows and rows of the shops. So similarly, there must have been at least about 100 shops selling articles which were meant for performing your final rites. Flowers and coffins and I mean, everything over there actually reminded you of death. You couldn't see anything but death over there. And once it so happened that I had some free time, so I said, let me walk into a funeral parlor. Yeah. Huge. Like, the funeral parlor that I visited was at least the size of this room. And it was divided into various sections. And just when I entered into this particular funeral parlor, there was a funeral that was in process. Some Chinese businessman apparently had died. And this whole room was filled with flowers. It was filled. Thousands and thousands of bouquets of flowers were arranged in a very neat and orderly fashion. And all the relatives and friends of this person had gathered around him. And they were all glorifying him, talking about his good qualities, saying that this person is such a nice person and so philanthropic, so charitable, so this, so that. Done in a very, very... And the person who was lying in the coffin was also looking so effulgent. So much of care had been taken to make his body look much more alive than he was when he was alive. And everybody was coming and offering their glorification to him. And I was thinking to myself that this is such a wonderful place to be actually Krishna conscious. But just outside the street, when I came out of the funeral parlor, right in front of my eyes, I was seeing a boy and a girl embracing. And they were completely lost in their own, lost in themselves. Just completely, blissfully unaware of what was going on around them. And I was really struck by the power of Maya. How powerful Maya could be that right in this place which is giving you a complete and a very gross picture of what your final destination is. In such a place also, people are completely blissfully unaware. So the situation that is created is somehow or the other, even though the funeral parlor is supposed to remind a person of death, but the whole funeral parlor is arranged in such a way that there is no visibility of death. Death is not visible. It's somehow hidden. Unless and until you take efforts to go inside a funeral parlor and see for yourself what is happening, you would never know that a person, that all the people who die are actually coming over here. So I was really struck by Vaisheshika Prabhu's statement that where is the solution that people have created for death? Even though the conditions of life may be made so wonderful. And in some countries, the people have carried it to such an extent. I remember having visited a gents' washroom, and I was told that the toilet seat becomes warm in winter and cool in summer. And these are the type of toilets that are maximum sold in Japan. Very sophisticated gadgets by which practically you don't have to do anything in order to cleanse yourself after you evacuate. And even in a public toilet, you will be able to see toilets like this. What to talk about at homes. So, even there, and what to talk about heating or cooling the homes, somehow or the other, the best possible temperature is strived for. Like somebody mentioned that in Golok Vrindavan, a devotee was mentioning that in Golok Vrindavan must be that the temperature should be around 24 degrees. An ideal temperature where you don't need either heating or cooling. But such a temperature never exists anywhere. It's either too cold or too hot. And in some other countries, it's very hot in summer and very cold in winter. So you have machines which cool you down in summer and which heat you up in winter. It's compulsory. So man strives to somehow or the other make this life as comfortable as possible, not realizing that sooner or later, distress is going to come upon him. And it comes. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, anityam, asukam, lokam, we have to understand what does Krishna mean by that. Anityam, temporary, asukam, place of misery. And for us, it is one of our important aspects of our preaching that we tell people that actually this place is a miserable place. Somehow or the other, we have to try and get out of this situation rather than trying to make the situation into a comfortable situation. There is no comfort in this material world, ultimately. And that is what Srila Prabhupada is trying to explain to us in this purport. And there are so many instances in the scriptures which tell us that whatever arrangements we may try to make and whatever we may try to do, ultimately, we are going to be in a miserable situation. And one of the most illustrative examples of this is the life of Maharaj Chitraketu, whose pastimes we just read a few months back. Now, from a material point of view, Maharaj Chitraketu was absolutely in a very, very comfortable situation. 10 million wives. It's unimaginable. There are some states in America which have the situation today, although it's not legal, but somehow or the other the government is turning a blind eye to it. But recently there was on the internet a very shocking incident of a man having 90 wives in America. Of course, only one wife was legal, all the other 89 were illegal. But the fact was that each and every one of these ladies identified themselves with this man as a husband. And they would be having children, and he had over 200 children. And somehow or the other, the authorities came to know about it, and then it became a huge scandal. So man's nature is somehow or the other to be having as many wives as possible, and we could see in the life of Maharaj Chitraketu. Not that he wanted his wives for sense gratification, but he was a Vedic king. But he didn't have any child. He didn't have a son. In spite of being married to 10 million wives, he didn't have a son. And this was one thing that was completely tormenting him. So although he had everything that a person could possibly aspire for, he was a king of the entire planet Earth. But because of this one single fact that since he didn't have a son, he was in such distress that practically for him living was a nightmare. And his only aspiration was, somehow or the other I should have a son. Somehow or the other I should have a son. So it so happened one day in his kingdom, Angira Muni came. And Maharaj Chitraketu immediately got up from his high seat, offered all respects to the sage, welcomed him very affectionately. And Angira Muni asked Maharaj Chitraketu, "What is it that is making you feel so disturbed?" Although the sage knew everything, but still. So then Maharaj Chitraketu opened his heart out and said that, "I have everything. Everything possible that a person could aspire for, I have. Except that I don't have a son. So if I were to get a son, my life would be perfect." So Angira Muni asked him, "Are you sure that if you get a son, everything will be perfect?" And Maharaj Chitraketu, because he was completely blinded by this particular aspect which was lacking in his life, he told Angira Muni that if you give me a son, my life will be perfect. So then the sage blessed him and said that yes, you will have a son, but the son will be the cause of your happiness as well as your distress. So in due course of time, the oldest wife of Maharaj Chitraketu, whose name was Kritadyuti, she got a son. And ordinarily, Maharaj Chitraketu, because he was a king, one would have expected him to be a diplomat. And because he had a son, he started spending all this free time with his eldest wife and with his son. And one would have expected him to at least spend some time with the other wives. Somehow the nature of this material world is that if somebody else has something that you don't have, this is a cause of envy. In fact, it is this aspect of envy which drives the world civilization today. What is it that is actually making a person strive in order to achieve higher and higher goals in life in terms of material prosperity? What is that singular factor? His only desire to cause envy in the hearts of other people. Like Srila Prabhupada would say that if there was just one person living in this world, there was nobody else, just one person, and he had all the facilities, there would be absolutely no enthusiasm for him to work, because what's the use of working? Whom does he have to show whatever he has earned? But in a society, a person strives to earn more money, higher prestige, a bigger position, only to make others envy of him. Because he gets the satisfaction that others are envying him, so I'm successful. I have achieved it. So this is that singular aspect that actually drives world civilization today. If you see the advertisements out there, they are actually promoting this by making you strive harder and harder and harder. How is it otherwise they will be able to market their products? They want you to buy their products. And in order to induce you to buy the products, they have all those advertisements which extol how wonderful a person is. So you want to be like him. You want to be like the person who is there out in the hoarding. So you try to improve your quality of life. And that is how development takes place. So if this material world was to be free from envy, actually, there would be no need for a person to strive so much. He would be just happy with whatever he has. Everything would be so nice and peaceful. So this 9,999,999 wives of Maharaj Chitraketu, they were so envious. Why is it that the king is spending so much of time with this eldest wife? The reason is the son. So let us get rid of the son. And along with that, we will also be able to affect the wife. So it's not just the son who was the object of the envy. It was also the wife. So they knew that by harming the son, automatically the wife will also be harmed. So they poisoned the child. And then the next day morning, when the nurse went to wake up the child, she found that the child was dead. And then she came and told the queen. The queen went over there and she collapsed. And then the message came to the king, and the king, we all know what happened. It's completely shattered. Just at that time, Angira Muni came once again. And this time, Angira Muni knew that Maharaj Chitraketu is ready to listen to philosophy. Actually, that is what happens to all of us. When everything becomes very comfortable and everything goes on very nicely in our lives, who wants to actually listen to philosophy? 99% of people come into Krishna consciousness when they are distressed. Although in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that there are four types of people who come to Krishna consciousness. There are four types of people who never come to Krishna consciousness. But of this, Srila Prabhupada explains that majority of the people come to Krishna consciousness when they are distressed, when they are actually suffering, when they are intensely in anxiety. So Maharaj Chitraketu was receptive to spiritual knowledge at this point of time. And Angira Muni then explained to him that this is the nature of the material world. Sometimes you have happiness, sometimes you have sadness, sometimes you have distress in your life. And just like you didn't invite distress, there's no need for you to actually invite happiness. So much of philosophy was told by Angira Muni to Maharaj Chitraketu. And right in front of Maharaj Chitraketu, the sun was brought back. And Angira Muni asked the sun, "Why did you leave your father so early?" And the son said, "Which father? I've had so many fathers. He's just one of my fathers is Maharaj Chitraketu." So very illustrative example in the Srimad Bhagavatam that although Maharaj Chitraketu had everything, he was such an unhappy person because he had such an intense desire, longing, thinking that my life is unfulfilled unless and until I get a son. He was trying to strive for happiness, thinking that a son is going to give him happiness. But the son actually was giving him so much of distress. Gave him so much of distress. Unimaginable suffering came about because of the son. So this process of Krishna consciousness helps us to become detached. The whole goal of Krishna consciousness is that we don't get affected either by happiness or by distress. Like in this particular shloka, Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya Sitoshna Sukadukada Agamam Paino Nitya Stam Titikshaswa Bharata. A person of discrimination does not get affected either by happiness or by distress. So this process of Krishna consciousness helps us to come to this platform where we don't get affected significantly by either by happiness or by distress. And as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we get situated at a stage where increasingly we become detached. And we see from the lives of so many of these great acharyas and also for the lives of Srila Prabhupada's disciples who have left their bodies in such wonderful consciousness. Even the second generation, Srila Prabhupada's grand disciples, they left their bodies in such consciousness of detachment. And that is what all of us have to strive for. Antakale cha maam eva smaran muktva kalevaram. Yatrayati samadbhavam yatinati atra samshaya. At the end of life, the goal is to remember Krishna and go home back to Godhead. Because the Lord gives us this benediction through the Bhagavad Gita that if we remember Him at the time of death, then we'll attain His abode from which we never have to come down back into this material world again. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo iti tatvata. Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti maam iti soharjana. We don't have to come back into this material world, which is a place of duality, suffering and happiness. So Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his schoolmates are so relevant in today's context, in this age of Kali Yuga, where you see that there is actually more suffering than happiness. Srila Prabhupada, his disciples who are preaching this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, are doing such a wonderful work in trying to reach out to the people that yes, this age of Kali Yuga is nothing but suffering. You might try to make it into a happy place, but it's going to be ultimately resulting in suffering. And the Srimad Bhagavatam classes that we attend every day in the morning is only to reinforce this particular aspect that yes, this is a place of suffering. Every day, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Why is it that Srila Prabhupada has made it obligatory for us to listen to Srimad Bhagavatam every day? In every ISKCON temple all over the world, you will find that in the morning there is Srimad Bhagavatam class. For about 45 minutes, devotees are being told only this particular aspect, that this material world is a place of misery. Try and create a situation that you become detached from this material world. So we are so fortunate to be part of this glorious movement, to be constantly reminded. Otherwise, the nature of this mind is to somehow or the other direct our intelligence towards happiness. Somehow or the other look for happiness, somehow or the other strive for happiness. That's the nature of this mind. So we have to bind our mind through the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam into understanding this particular aspect, that let us never forget that this is a miserable place. Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. And our goal is to go home back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Are there any comments or questions? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.